Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, but the rugby podcast that is there for you every single Monday morning. For getting on for 11 seasons now, over 10 years of this, and thank you very much for listening. If you haven't already, hit subscribe, get extra content at patreon.com/eggchasers, and we will
on YouTube.
I'll get to that in a second, okay, Jay. Okay. I was just letting you finish your mastication over there.
Is that what you call it?
Nice bit of cheese, was it?
Yeah, it is delicious.
Lovely.
Low-fat cathedral city.
Lovely. we are going to do a Patreon podcast this evening. We are, boys. All right?
Yes.
So, all right. Extra content. And in that, we are going to delve into some areas that we might, for legal reasons, not want to speak candidly on this podcast.
Yeah, and we'll be dealing with culture war stuff, which idiot solicitors that bother emailing into the show don't like. So I'm really looking forward to that. I can't believe how simple some people that email us are.
We get loads of great emails.
Most of them are good. Some of them are so painfully simple.
We get some tremendous ones. And if you want to email, you can get in touch with us. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. You've already heard from JB. There's Phil.
Hello.
I'm looking at the bottom of Phil's shoes and he's got Continental Tread trainers, and that's in contrast with JB's bare OnlyFans ready feet. Mm-hmm. We're good to go on the podcast. Obviously building up to the Six Nations round 4 coming up this weekend, and we'll, I'm sure, despite the fact there's, you know, no Premiership to talk about, there's a bit of URC, there's a bit of Super Rugby, and there's some Six Nations, we'll still manage to stretch this out into a marathon podcast talking
100%.
About some sort of nonsense, so rest assured in that one. Where shall we start? What's the news of the week been? Has there been much this week?
It's been pretty quiet, hasn't it?
It feels pretty quiet news-wise.
I'm 100% for getting rid of one of these two fallow weeks in the Six Nations. We've said it for years. It just drags it out. And especially from our perspective, because we primarily cover English rugby, having no Premiership, historically you would have Premiership games now.
Yeah.
Well, Premiership not Cup, much. I mean, why can't we just play the final?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just get over and done with.
Just do something. It's not to say there's been no rugby. There's been URC, there's been Super Rugby, there's been Portugal-Spain. Rugby Nations Cup. There's been some sevens with Mr. DuPont tearing it up, predictably.
Is he good at sevens?
Yes.
I mean, the easy thing to say would be, we think he's going to be good. But you don't know until they play.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've only seen highlights. But he's beating people for pace in sevens. Which, I mean, he is a very fast nine. He's a deceptively fast nine because...
And strong.
He's also strong as a bull. Yeah. He kind of just does everything. So, yeah. The best player in the world who is good at everything is good at sevens.
Yeah, he's good against even less players.
Yeah.
Fewer
players.
Well done.
So I'll tell you what, because you've just touched on that, Phil, I'm just going to kick off with an email from Nick Laver.
Laver.
I hope I said that right, Nick. But contact eggchasers@gmail.com. He says, hello, fellas, an observation and a question. And his first one is an observation. He says, I've been watching the start of the F1 season and thinking about his comparison to rugby. F1's USP is that they drive really, really fast. It's very dangerous, and there's been a number of fatalities down the years. If F1 decided to limit speed limits, the sport would be finished, because the whole point is they drive fast, a la physicality in rugby. That's an observation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have had safety improvements made.
Yeah, just on that, I read that email. Nice thought. With F1... Their problem is, very similar to rugby, is that there's lots of incremental improvements over time. So you look at the rugby players, they're getting incrementally heavier, stronger, more powerful. So we've always had big lads, but I don't think we've ever had big lads that were so powerful, and that'd be one of the key differences. And therefore, you're constantly chasing your tail and trying to add rules to sort of limit this power. F1's kind of the same. I mean, the cars are not slower than what they used to be. Well, actually, I think they are slower than what they used to be. But then they accelerate faster, or they turn faster, or something else happens. And as long as it's within the laws of physics, they get faster and faster and faster. And I think F1 has a similar problem, which is they're constantly changing the rules to limit just the raw ability of these cars. So I think there is a good comparison there. Mm. But the key is not to trash the sport. And F1 knows not to do that. Rugby does not.
We can talk about that a little bit more in the Patreon pod in light of what Simon Massey-Taylor has said this week. So just a little tease there to the Patreon podcast.
I don't watch F1.
Do you not?
No, not at all.
That surprises me.
Yeah, because I like cars as well.
Yeah, you do.
A bit of a car guy. But I've just never found F1 that interesting. But I do know they have, exactly as you've said, JB, huge number. The regulations that prescribe almost every aspect of the car in order to make it, but to limit certain aspects, which probably, well, they will definitely limit the top speed. They would definitely restrict that in some way, but also to make it safer. But I think the key point is that it doesn't change the overall F1 because it pushes it down a more strategic manner. So, like, certain, it pushes all the cars. I guess it's probably more like the salary cap, in that it pushes more consistency. The more tightly you regulate the parameters that the car can be designed to, and everyone gets narrower and narrower parameters down the same path, then there is more consistency. Therefore, strategic decisions become.
Yeah, hang on a minute.
They have
hang on.
Greater influence.
But you're assuming one thing, right? Which is the regulations are adhered to, or they are so well written that you can't get around them. So I see this in financial services a lot, or Beard Monaco independent financial advisors, which is because...
If you need someone to dodge the financial regulations...
No, we don't
I'm
do that.
Joking, I'm joking,
absolutely
I'm joking.
Don't do that. Stop talking, everyone. Great IFAs. But you see, like, as the regulator tries to push you down one route, the person who manages to find out what is legal within the regulations but no one else is doing because of the groupthink is the one who will make the money. And it's exactly the same with F1. As soon as somebody works out how to make something or do something outside of the regulations which no one else is doing, then they start winning. And
then that either leads, so you have a couple of seasons of success, and then it leads to either everyone copies that model, all that model gets regulated against.
Well, you end up solving for the wrong thing, don't you? So rather than solving for how do we make the car go as fast as we can, or how do we make the salary cap as efficient as possible, or how do we deliver financial services within this framework, like St. James's Place has found out when they're trying to cheat the system, they close the loophole. But you end up trying to solve to beat the regulation rather than beat each other.
And moving it back to rugby, and just to build on what Phil says, you've just described England after the last World Cup. Oh, South Africa won by having really good scrum. Let's buy their scrum coach.
Yeah.
Oh, South Africa won because they've evolved their attack or their defence.
Their defence.
Let's get Felix Jones
in. Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the first thing Felix Jones does is walks in the building and goes, "Where is Peter Steph's toy?
Yeah.
Where's Quagg Smith?
Yeah, yeah.
I need these tools.
Where's D'Alandi?
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you for that, Nick. His question after that observation was, has this break for the Premiership...
We're not answering his question. Brilliant.
No, it was just an observation. The question, and this is actually what prompted it, is because Phil mentioned something along these lines, or in this area. He says, has this break for the Premiership during the Six Nations been damaging to the league? This is Nick, think not, as the league has very much plays second fiddle during this period. Your thoughts?
So, yeah... I think it is damaging in one way because it's an enormous break. Like, I can't remember what's going on in the league, and we cover a hell of a lot of rugby.
Yeah.
I'll need to refresh myself before the next round of Premiership games. But he's right in that it definitely plays second fiddle, and this is where the point that we've made in the past is you should have stratified periods of time where you just do domestic and then you just do the kind of... international club game or the European club game and wider club game, the and then the, you just do internationals.
The way that New Zealand do it.
Yeah. The Southern Hemisphere model historically.
If you think of the momentum that those Premiership teams were building just before the Six Nations, I don't remember English rugby being this good for maybe 5 years. Stadiums looked full, teams were playing well, all those narratives were building, all of the atmospheres were building, and then it just stops. So when they all come back, are you going to be that motivated to go and watch? I mean, you might be because of all the stars from the Six Nations that are returning. So maybe you are, maybe Bath's a bad example. But are you going to be the same for Harlequins, or are you going to be the same for anyone else?
Anyone who's got something in the league still to go, you will be. There'll be any deciding games.
The fans will turn up and do it, and I think actually the games will get relatively more viewership than they will do overall, because people don't care about the games that get put on during the Six Nations. It's a total afterthought.
Yeah.
But just, I think, spare a thought for some of those players who are having to do like another pre-season.
Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day. They are doing effectively a pre-season. It's like almost a maintenance pre-season.
But do you actually feel sorry for them?
So I don't.
I think it's going
to
be
Phil would love the idea just to go and shift like a pre-season run.
I hated pre-season.
Yeah, I did.
I still probably hate pre-season. No, I like playing rugby. I don't like pre-season. But
you like CrossFit.
I do like CrossFit, weirdly. But for those guys, it's probably a welcome relief to get healthy again and fit.
Yeah.
Because they always say that you start the season, the fittest you're going to be, the strongest you're going to be, and it's a gradual decline. So actually, just topping up on that fitness, topping up on that strength isn't a terrible thing to do.
But if you did want to make the money that is available, and there's not as much as the clubs and rugby in general would like, if you did want to get it to stretch further, then you wouldn't have players at your club for 12 months of the year in the way that they do, so intensely. Like actually, as Phil said, you could achieve, if everyone actually gets around a table and the odd turkey does vote for Christmas and solve this global season issue, you could have the Premiership in one block. It's a confined period, and then you can follow the stories. As Phil said, the biggest issue is, right, if you asked anyone other than an absolute diehard rugby Norse, what's going on in the Premiership? I haven't got a clue. I could probably tell you Newcastle are terrible.
Yeah,
and that's about
Gloucester haven't won for ages.
And I don't know.
Northampton have been good.
Who's top? Don't know.
Yeah, Northampton.
You do lose touch quickly, including myself. Just for about turkeys voting for Christmas points, it's not quite that, because the vote that needs to be made, or the change that needs to be made, is effectively moving the Six Nations. And I think the reason this is so problematic is because you're playing with the unknown. Now, I love Six Nations in this block, in the spring. It feels nice to me. It feels historic, and you know, it's got all the history of this time of year, and I love it. But the worry is, if you move it, it won't have the same impact. And we don't know if it will, or we don't know if it won't. But as it's the thing, and the only thing, which pays for everything other than a World Cup, why would you mess with that? Because everything is so dependent on it. You might get a better Premiership, but if the Six Nations fails, rugby fails.
See, I don't think you need to move the Six Nations, because that could be the fixed focal point of everything else. Mm. But then everything else needs to move.
So the Premiership before the Six Nations, Europe after the Six Nations.
Well, so the biggest money spinner is international rugby.
Yep.
So Six Nations stays where it is. You've then got two other blocks of international rugby. You've got the summer tours and then the autumn internationals. Now, World Rugby has already started making moves to shift that with this global calendar thing where all the Tier 1 teams play against each other across a two-year period.
The Nations Cup.
So you would need to move those either to directly before or directly after, or a split. So you have, say, your summer, your autumn internationals become your Christmas internationals. That lead in there, like warm-ups for the Six Nations. You have your Six Nations, and then to kind of celebrate afterwards, you have your tours, your late spring tours, where Ireland go to South Africa, say. And then you get into the other calendars. So maybe a three-month break, then Premiership, then Europe, then back into the international.
Mm.
So you can definitely, like, you don't have to move the Six Nations to do it.
It's the tours which are a problem.
They become a problem because they're immediately after that period.
I mean, I say the problem, this is very narrow-minded from me as a Northern Hemisphere rugby fan, I'm not a fan of the Southern Hemisphere, but nevertheless, when the Southern Hemisphere teams come, they can play four teams quite comfortably in one tour. You simply can't do that if you're going. I mean, could go to South Africa,
and yet what you're about to go on and say is exactly what World Rugby have currently got proposed for this World Nations Cup. England,
get rid of the tour.
Let's take England as an example. They will play the other five teams in the Northern Hemisphere top six during the Six Nations. Fine, those are ticked off in February, March. Then they will play three of the Southern Hemisphere teams in July away.
So South Africa, New Zealand, Australia.
Which would mean probably in consecutive weekends playing in different continents.
I mean, not only is that not healthy, it's just, I mean, it's not good for athletes. And I'm not a global warming guy. I am not. I want to be very clear on this. I'm not a global warming guy at all.
But the authorities tell us they are.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. When Bill Beaumont's saying we want the most sustainable World Cup, I don't know what he wants to do, feed people crickets at half time or something. But when he's asking for that, you can't really say we're going to fly the Southern Hemisphere team and Northern Hemisphere teams around the Southern Hemisphere like it's nothing.
Saturday week one, England, you're playing in Cape Town. Saturday week two, you're playing in Buenos Aires. Saturday week three, you're playing
Tokyo.
In Wellington. What?
And then week four, you're playing in Buenos Aires.
Oh, just insane.
Yeah.
It's just not... No, it doesn't even make sense for me. It does make sense for me from a sporting point of view.
If they had
from
all
a cost point of view.
What if you had all of those? And the other problem is, if you did what some people have suggested, which is like you go, we're going to Vegas and all of the games are going to be there over one weekend.
I'm listening.
Or over consecutive weekends. That sounds cool. But then the flip side of that is then, so 2026, you're in Vegas with a big tournament with all of the world's teams getting together and playing games 1 year before a World Cup.
And, sounds like a World Cup to me.
And one of the key benefits of those summer tours and the autumn internationals is it brings a load of money in for those the unions hosting it.
Yeah.
Which you just lose if you do it in Vegas or Dubai or wherever.
And unless, of course, the home union hosts the game in Dubai.
Yeah, but they're not going to be taking as much money in, one would assume.
Well,
Twickenham...
Yeah. Well, the RFU own that stadium.
Yes.
So I don't think South Africa have a national stadium, do they? In the same way that I don't think New Zealand have a national stadium.
South Africa got a lot of national stadiums for the 2010 Football World Cup.
Yeah,
they built an incredible number. Some of them right next door to existing 50,000-seater stadiums.
A lot of people got very rich from those stadiums, didn't they?
Anyway, thank you, Nick, for sparking off those thoughts. And I don't know if we're any closer to thinking about any of them. But
the only other thing I'd say is, if you time... There need to be, again, some stratification of the kind of higher level and lower level rugby. Because I can see, doing what I just described before, which I've never thought about before, but having, say, Christmas internationals, six followed by Six Nations, followed by some kind of tour, TBC. So you've got a three-month period, four-month period of solid international rugby. You could run the majority of your lower-level club rugby in that period, and you set up all your kickoff times so that they kick off immediately before international rugby. So the players and everyone who's come down to watch Tok H or BP or Sedgley.
Love it.
They stay in the ground and actually watch an England international or a Wales international or South Africa or New Zealand.
Too logical, Phil. Much joined up thinking going on there, mate.
But there could be a really big benefit for the entirety of the rugby fraternity from doing something, from everyone getting their act together and doing something like that.
Rugby players and current rugby fans aren't who the... Well, actually, again, I was about to say that's not who the authorities want to appeal to, but the noises that are starting to be made, as we will talk about on the Patreon podcast, it seems like they may have started to realise the futility of that way of thinking.
You know, like I started at the top of the show talking about idiots emailing in to our podcast saying, why do you talk about culture wars? Like, you know, okay, grow up. This is the reason. This is exactly the reason. Because it is this want, or no, it's not a want. It's the original shame that rugby has, that it doesn't like its own fans. It just doesn't really like them. Now, I'm not saying that rugby clubs don't. I'm not saying that you and I don't, or rugby players, or the clubs themselves. But the people at the very top of the game, like Bill Sweeney, they simply do not like rugby fans. And that's why they're constantly trying to broaden out the appeal, trying to wave flags everywhere, trying to do everything.
Hide what rugby is.
It's a highly masculine collision contact sport. That's all it is. That's why it appeals to the crowd it appeals to. So to make it not appeal to that crowd, you have to hide that. And for the best part of a decade, that's what they've been doing. And it's been disastrous. Absolutely disastrous.
Keep your powder dry, mate.
Yeah.
We'll let you go. We'll let you go wild. Yeah. Here's one thing. We've got an email here from Jack Simpson, contacthedchasers@gmail.com. You'll like this one. It says, long-time listener, blah, blah. I noticed a familiar face on the London Irish Wild Geese starting lineup.
I've heard this.
I thought you might be interested to hear. There's a. Do you know? Have you seen?
I don't know. I've not seen this email.
So, London Irish Wild Geese had a player lining up in the 13 jersey. Ooh. Former England international.
Was he an England international though?
Yeah.
Former England international.
Yeah.
And did he play? So I don't know this at all. Did he play for London Irish?
No.
No.
Mm, okay. Did he play 13 as his primary position?
Yeah, played both inside and outside centre.
And 15.
Yeah, actually, a little bit, yeah. Let's say what clubs he played for. Newcastle Falcons.
Toulon.
Okay. I think I know who it might be.
Okay.
Do you want some more clubs?
Well, no. I
Northampton? Did you say Northampton?
Oh, yeah, I would. Northampton Saints as well, yeah.
Northampton.
Oh, sorry.
London Welsh.
London Welsh, yeah.
It must be Ollie Barkley.
What? How do you get that
play
wrong?
For Toulon?
Yeah, but no, he didn't.
And London
Welsh.
He played for London Welsh.
Well, hang on. Let's just stop.
He didn't play for Newcastle either.
Hang on, let's just stop here. Also, Ollie Barkley's CV would be dominated by Bath and Bristol.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bath and Gloucester.
So say the clubs again.
And Llanthi Scarlets.
So the club you would most associate him with would be... Clubs would be...
I can't believe you said that.
Northampton Newcastle. Saints.
What, in the UK?
Yeah.
Oh. No, Newcastle.
Newcastle.
It's on me.
Yes.
Correct.
God.
There he is.
Get messed up.
There he is in London Irish Wild Geese.
Very good. Good.
He's got He's got great tan. Lovely.
I saw him in Dubai. He was
great shape.
My word, he's in good shape. He's in good shape.
Yeah.
The only thing that looks old about him is his hair colour, and even his hair looks great. It looks like he's dyed it. He looks like a young man who's dyed his hair grey. just on Ollie Barkley, he did play in France, didn't he?
He did.
I want to say Racing.
What a boy Ollie Barkley was.
Maybe.
Loose.
Yes.
Loose. I don't mean like that as a derogatory thing. I just mean he was just on the field, off the field. He was just a one-off.
Yeah, loved to scrap up with students, allegedly. That was like his hobby.
That wasn't what I was... I don't know what you're talking about.
So, but he played two clubs, Racing and Grenoble.
I didn't know Grenoble. I knew Racing.
And came back to London Irish.
Yeah.
London Welsh, sorry.
Yeah, in those fateful years at London Welsh.
I think he might have done very, very well in business since...
Ollie Barkley or...
Ollie Barkley, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think he's done particularly well.
Work for a bank, maybe, something like that?
I think it might just be... No, I think I think he's just... His own boss, property, I think.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I appreciated that one, Jack. Thank you for the email. And, and also we got an email from Tom in Warwickshire. That's Olcester. Is that Olcester? Or I don't know how you pronounce that part of the world, but I'm sure it's lovely. But he says, did you notice who got a new job at the England and Wales Cricket Board?
And actually, I'm delighted he did.
As their Director of Cricket Operations. someone from rugby who regarded as an exceptional leader. Leadership skills.
Stuart Hooper. Correct. I did see that a few weeks ago.
I'm sort of delighted that this has happened to Stuart Hooper. Because, I mean, I'm not sure he deserves it based on what he achieved at Bath in his leadership positions. But there again, he should never have stayed at Bath. This is what he should have done to start with, which has gone somewhere else. Mm. Probably in rugby, but if he's not in rugby, fine. I think he'll probably do a good job there.
Yeah.
You know, a complete reset away from the fishbowl is not a bad shout for anyone.
And if it's a management role, I think it probably is. He'll probably be very good at that. Management leadership.
I reckon he'll do better in that role than Clive Woodward did at Southampton Football Club.
That's a great, that is a great podcast in of itself, isn't it, for Patreon? People that did worse in their roles than Stuart Hooper did in, no, is going to do in cricket. So like Clive Woodward, there's going to be some great ones.
Matt Proudfoot in his England ball.
Yeah, that is the bar. Stuart Hooper's predicted success in cricket and the overs and unders of people that have done various roles.
So, Todd Blackadder.
Darren Childs did a far worse job than anyone else. Bill Sweeney. there's going to be... Actually, Bill Sweeney, to be fair, I can't put him in that category. I just don't like him. I'm not saying he's completely incompetent. Darren Childs definitely falls into that category.
So again, keep your powder dry. This is gold. Yeah, I love it. And yeah, that's where we're at. Let's get on to the Six Nations then, because one of the bits of news today is that Alex Mitchell and Marcus Smith are both fit and available for England. There's some noise going from somewhere. What's going on?
Me kicking things?
Yes, I think it's you kicking things.
Gone?
Go on?
Yeah, I think so. Alex Mitchell and Marcus Smith are both fit and available and part of England's training squad this week ahead of the Ireland Test match.
Nothing really changes for me.
Mitchell coming back does change things.
Mitchell might just start. I don't think Marcus Smith has a place in the team at this present moment in time.
So I think were Marcus Smith available, he probably would have played 15 against Scotland.
Yeah, if he had a full run in the Six Nations, he'd probably be part of the squad. I don't think now's the time.
I hadn't even considered that. Wow.
Because, and I can't remember if I actually spoke about this, but I was certainly thinking about this. The selection of Furbank at 15 was most similar to the selection of Marcus Smith against Fiji in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Because when Marcus Smith is injured, Furbank is the most similar in the squad to
I'd not even thought that. I just kind of isolated that Marcus Smith experiment to within the World Cup because he only had 33 men. And
no, yeah, I think it's
maybe
I think
part
it is
of
more,
a broader plan.
And I guess Scotland and Fiji, there are certain similarities that those two teams have. As in, they have devastating running threats. Neither team particularly kicks to compete, which is where Freddie Stewart is most useful. So,
I'm convinced, though, that I'm just thinking it's true that Marcus Smith is a better fullback option than Furbank.
Oh, I'm not saying that. I'm not even sure
he's better second playmaker.
He's saying that had he been fit and available.
I'm saying that the only selection that we've seen under Borthwick that was similar to that was the Marcus Smith selection. And if Marcus Smith is injured, the most like Marcus Smith to play that, most able to play that Marcus Smith role at 15 would be Furbank.
Do you think, though, had Marcus Smith been fit from the start of the Six Nations, that George Ford would have still started that first match against?
Probably.
Against Italy.
Because he did, if we go again back to the World Cup, when Faz was banned in the Argentina game, it was Ford. So, there's no reason not to.
I think you're probably right. I will mention the YouTube channel now. I've done a video earlier this evening talking about these changes. So, Egg Chasers Rugby on YouTube. Help me get towards... I don't know, where are you now?
Six figures?
Just 71,000.
So, yeah, it's a six figures.
Enough about the money you made this month. How many subscribers?
It's going all right. It's going well. So come and subscribe and have a watch and get stuck in there. But I kind of had it in my mind that Marcus Smith is the guy that they're going to hand the keys to. But I think you might have a point.
Well, do you know on the Marcus Smith fullback thing, you don't think that's just because of a compressed squad for the World Cup?
That's what I'd assumed.
It could be. And Furbank
wasn't playing the way he played this season.
But until I saw Furbank at 15 against Scotland, and then I was like, right, what are the similarities? And there are some similarities between Scotland and Fiji. So it then might be more of a tactical thing.
One of the times rises, I think it was Stuart Barnes... this week?
Ben Earl at 12.
God, that's... No,
right. He doubled down on that, by the way. He did a whole... Like, there were so many people giving Stuart Barnes so much stick for saying Ben Earl should be 12. And not saying... Had Stuart Barnes said, could we convince Saracens to give this a go and play him at 12? What he actually said was, against Ireland, Ben Earl should start at 12.
So
And then he's had another article since saying... I know I've had a load of stick, but I absolutely believe in what I said. I like his conviction.
Can I just say on Stuart Barnes, he is a guy that watches a tremendous amount of rugby. So I'm kind of hesitant to say anything negative about his rugby knowledge. Sometimes it's crazy and wild, but you know, at least he's got an opinion, and you're kind of right to point that out. But how can you not, a man of his of his experience in the game, draw the comparison from when another great rugby player was moved from back row to centre?
Michael Hooper.
Richie Vernon,
Michael Hooper, Sam Burgess. Now, you'd argue that Sam Burgess's experience in rugby league is far more suited to a whole career played at back row. And he didn't make it work. So why does he think that moving Ben Earl to 12 would make it work? You're right, Michael Hooper didn't make it work. We've had loads of back row that moved around. Bergamasco didn't exactly make it work at scrum half. I mean, that's slightly different, to be fair. But it's just not going to happen. They are specialists for reasons.
And it's something I spoke about on the pod previously. This is an English problem in that there are players, like Ben Earl is not massive at all.
No, he's not.
He's really not massive. He's listed as 6 foot and 105 kg, which is... Like, it'd be smaller than someone like Manu or Esther Hazen or Stuart McCloskey or Jonathan Donty as big, solid, robust centres. But he never had this... And I think this is true of him and of Sam Simmons, who's a similar stature. They never had the skill set growing up to be able to branch out into those positions. And therefore, it was never an option for them. I think Ben Earl, had he been playing centre from the age of 15, probably could have been one of the best. He would be a Jonathan Donty style centre or a Lau Mappy style centre.
I'm not convinced you're right on that, actually. Because playing centre is very formulaic. You tend to have to be in similar positions, similar times of the game. I think Sam Simmons and Ben Earl, particularly Ben Earl, when he's playing at his absolute best, the reason he's so good is because he knows his position so well. He can manufacture places for him to be,
Phil's talking about a sliding doors where he would have grown up playing that position and therefore would know it inside out as well.
If you are, but there's more flexibility given to you of where to be on the field in the back row than there is in the centres. Like in the centres, you've just got to be somewhere.
That is definitely true, and that's I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I'm saying his handling and his kicking are not.
His kicking would be miles off. Miles and miles off.
And this is the problem that England have. This is why there is one or two English players playing 12 in the Premiership every week, as we and more recently Steve Borthwick has identified, probably because he listens to us.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Because there are few players who get to 21, 22, 23 in England and have the combination of the size, the strength, the speed,
the guile,
and the ability to kick, to pass, to distribute, to read things. And it's that combination that I think seems to be missing in England.
Yeah, it's little things. You watch, think of a player, Mark Atkinson play, right? Mm. The way he plays 12, he's not the most powerful. He is a big boy.
Yeah,
but he's not
big.
A powerful bloke.
Nope.
So everyone thinks just because you're big, you're powerful. That isn't right. But he understands exactly the timing to get his hands free, exactly the angle to be, exactly the depth to be. It's a lot harder than just saying, you're a good runner, here's the ball, go and play 12.
Yeah, and he's got a superb skill set.
Yes,
his,
he has.
His distribution, his deft offloading, his wide and short and long kicking game, he's got all those skills that many, many people of his size do not have by the time they get to that age.
If Stuart Barnes' intention was to spark a conversation, get people talking about the rugby pages in the Times, job done.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, well, I mean, only amongst people that know who Ben Earl is, otherwise it makes no sense whatsoever.
I would question the decision if it is a genuine... I mean, if it is an honestly held... opinion, fair enough.
Like, that's lunacy,
good,
isn't it?
It's good to have an opinion.
If it's an honestly held opinion, it is lunacy.
It's lunacy next week.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that...
That's
had
the point.
Yeah, had it have been implemented... Ben Earl's 26 now. Had it have been implemented, say, 6 or 7 years ago, you could make it work.
Ben Earl's off to play Mitre Cup for a season to work on his 12 skills. Okay, yes. I'll take that seriously.
Exactly.
Not for Ireland next week, though.
No.
Yeah, exactly that.
Exactly.
I hadn't thought about them. I think you're probably right. George Ford probably will start against Ireland.
Definitely.
I would have thought so. 100%. I would be very surprised if he didn't.
So, Let's talk about another Times columnist, Stephen Jones, who thinks the only way England can beat Ireland is with the big boys. And he lists it. And
which big boys does he list? Because
Cunning himself?
I think he might have listed him, and that was probably one of the areas I would go. Two of the players he lists, Billy V and Manning.
Oh, my God.
What? No, he didn't.
I give you my
no
word.
Way.
Is that today?
It might be today, actually. Oh, let me have a quick look.
Billy V, so I was a big Billy V fan for a long period of time. I was a huge fan of him because I remember games 4 or 5 years ago, and I think I listed some of these on the pod, where you look down the metres made for the English pack, including the bench, so five players on the bench, and all of them put together made fewer metres in total than Billy V.
Yeah.
And so he was the only heavy ball traffic carrier that England had for such a long period of time, and he was sensational at it. He is not the player. So being 130 kg and dynamic doesn't always treat you well when you reach 30, 31, 32.
I think there are some big boys in the Premiership that have been unfairly overlooked, Will Collier being one. I do want George Martin back in.
Well, the four lists are Marler. Well, I suspect there's some place for Marler.
Yes, because Marler didn't start.
Manu and Martin. Scotland. And I completely agree with him on Martin. Totally agree with him on Martin.
Yeah.
I mean, Martin is the antidote to all sorts of things, actually. He's very good.
Well, he can do some of the work that Courtney Laws cannot do now.
Martin's performance against it was the South Africa in the semi-final.
Smash
that was
things.
An all-time
His hitting power as well is remarkable for such a big man, how low he gets. I mean, a couple of those can turn a game. I tell you what, I wouldn't mind him really smashing into McCarthy on the charge, just to see how it works out. I don't know who's going to win it, but I want to see it.
I'd be fascinated to see that matchup.
But McCarthy's got to be on at full tilt, and Martin's got to be at the perfect body angle. And just see what happens.
Wouldn't you love to watch that?
And someone gets caught in the middle of it. running a demi line. No!
Scrum half running the
So I think we're all agreed it'll be pretty much the same in the pack, except for George Martin will come in, maybe Chessam and Martin to start.
Genge started against Scotland, didn't he? I think
Genge needs to disappear for a while and work on his game.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Abano is in the squad.
I don't think Genge will start. I'll put it that way.
No, I don't think he will. I think he needs to really reappraise how he plays the game, and maybe leave Bristol.
He needs to work on his attitude.
Correct. Abano is a good shout. Massive bloke, very very strong. Where's the downside? I tell you what I like about Abano. He is the guy I want to carry the ball when you're in a pick and go situation, and he goes hunting for it. So I was watching Bath, and some of the lads did not want to go near that ball.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
And Abano did want to go near the ball. I was thinking, like, there's a handful of guys you need now to get that extra yard. Abano is definitely one of them.
Abano and Tom Dunn is very good at that.
Yeah, that to me is the opposite of a red flag. Get that guy in.
Yeah. So yeah, Marler start. Definitely, there's got to be space for Martin. But then how do you make the space for Martin? I would probably put Itoji at six.
I would put one of those second rows, Chessam, Martin, or Itoji, one of them at six.
Yeah, so you have the three of them and then Roots drops out. Roots had a good game against Italy, but then he's been fairly anonymous besides that.
Yeah.
And obviously you make space for Chandler Cunningham South by moving Ben Earl into the centres.
Obviously.
No real juggling threat outside of
Underhill.
Well, Earl.
Huh?
What about Ben Earl?
Earl, yeah.
Ben Earl.
Ben Earl has to play, right?
Yeah. Has to play. Centres.
Has to play centre. And then Mitchell. I mean, I might go Mitchell Smith and just, well, what the heck. But actually, I'm quite happy with Ford.
Mitchell Ford.
I would probably, and some people are saying that Elliot Daly's had I think he's had a good Six Nations.
I think he's been good, but nevertheless,
I would probably start Faye Wiboso.
There was something he did, and I can't remember who it was against, and he didn't look like Elliot Daly to me. He was one-on-one with someone, maybe it was Scotland, and he just tried to get around the outside, and he couldn't do it. Maybe it was Scotland. Did he play Scotland?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He just didn't look himself.
I think at the least, he's the perfect boy to wear 23.
He is. Very handy.
Not Slade.
Very handy for 23.
No, Slade would be 13 for me.
Yeah.
Not Ollie Lawrence.
No. Well, because who goes 12? If Manu?
No.
No. Dingwall.
Dingers.
Dingwall, Lawrence, or Lawrence Slade. I think those are your choices.
Yeah, I think Dingwall, Lawrence.
Some would say Freeman at 13, but maybe.
Freeman stays on the wing.
Maybe that's how you make room for Faye Wiboso, putting Freeman at 13.
Yeah.
I do think Freeman stays on the wing.
Yeah, just stick people where they're good. it's not a hard concept. Stick them where they're good. Dingwall might not be your best player in total, but
he's the best 12 in the squad because he's just about the only 12 in the squad.
Just leave him be. Just let him develop into that role.
So we may have variations on the line, but we're broadly within a margin of error of a couple of spots. But fullback, Furbank, Stewart, make the call now. Who do you pick?
Well, Daly.
Yeah, okay.
If you want to make room for Bosa, because I tell you what, maybe he's not that good without Farrell, but when him and Farrell were on song and he's hitting the line and, you know, attacking from 15.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He is dynamite. I mean, he does operate for that 15 jersey so much better than he does at 11 or 14.
Yes, you could play that. I'd have Daly as number 23. I'd have Faye Wiboso and Freeman on the wings. And then I'd like to see Furbank get another shot.
So would I.
Because he's been playing so well in the Premiership.
And why pick a guy for one game and then back out again?
Yeah.
Whatever it was that was behind the reason to put him in the first place,
yeah,
persist with it, because the England backline cannot be that. They can't have dick fingers like the way they did last week.
No,
again.
That was particularly bad. Yeah. But I think the reality is it's kind of immaterial because Ireland are just going to crush them, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that was the other thing I thought about, and which I touch on in the video that I did earlier. Egg Chasers Rugby. Go and subscribe. I went, if all Irish players are fit, you could probably name right now and reel them straight off 13 guys that would start.
Yeah,
and there'd be maybe two positions on the field where there's a decision to make. Whereas England, I went, who isn't like absolutely nailed on? And I think I've got to four spots in the team.
Who are you for?
Jamie George.
Captain. Maru Itoje.
Itoje's in there.
Ben Earl will be in, but you don't know what shirt. Probably 8.
Or 12.
And I went Alex Mitchell, although you could say that's not actually sure.
Because you said everyone fit.
Yeah, because if Van Portfleet's back, then
so
there's a question.
Three then. I don't think there's anyone
Slade's
else
not nailed. Lawrence
nailed
is not
on.
Nailed. And certainly... I think Lawrence probably is nailed.
Ford?
It's what, in what shirt?
In what shirt?
I think Ford's in.
I think he probably is, but it's not 100%.
It's not nailed on in the way that Jack Crowley is for Ireland.
Yeah.
Jack Crowley, look at that. He's only played 3 games.
Yeah.
Nailed
I
know.
On. Exactly.
He won the URC with Munster and then didn't play in the World Cup, which cost Ireland. Never lost in an Ireland jersey.
Is he not?
No.
God, they could have done with him.
When he's played, it's because he didn't come off the bench.
He didn't come off the bench against New Zealand.
Tell you what, they could have done with him in a quarter-final if he's never lost tonight.
Sexton was out on his feet in the last half hour of that New Zealand game. And
That is going to be one of the all-time massive sporting administrative errors.
Yeah.
Which is holding on to Sexton as long as he did.
But from one of the all-time best coaches as well, probably. Farrell will go down as a superb coach, but that's a hell of an error.
But as Phil mentioned, had Jack Crowley come on after 50-55 minutes and Ireland lost.
No, as I said, you don't lose your job for keeping
Sexton
on the field. You do for taking him off and losing.
It was you that said it, yeah. He'd have been absolutely
pilloried,
hauled over the coals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's still got a job. I mean, you know, at some point you've got to make a tactical decision. How do I lose this and keep my job?
Mike Catt is leaving the Irish setup at the end of this season.
Is he? Mm. Where's he going?
Don't know. He's coming back to England. That's all we know. But he hasn't actually got a job to come back to, I don't believe.
Mm. And it's not as if
well, certainly not one announced.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no obvious Mike Catt holes in any Premiership teams that I can think of.
No, but a lot of people have questioned England's attack.
Mm. Who have England got lined up for the attacking role?
Well, Richard Wigglesworth has had that role for a while now.
And then is it right? Because Sinfield was announced that he was stepping down, but then yep. He's still in the coaching setup.
He's around, yeah.
But I think he's doing something like skills coach. So he's doing like a really narrow role, which is basically like warm-up drills.
Mm.
So that might be a Mike Catt-shaped hole.
Yeah, I wonder if he was going to do something in club rugby. Do you know what? I used to love Mike Catt as a player. He used to be one of my favourite players.
In the 2003 World Cup,
it was so good.
A quarter final against Wales.
Yeah. Bring him off the bench just to steady the ship, calm things down, get us in the right part of the field.
Well, he's a guy who never had a position. He started
10, 12, 15. He played on the wing. 10.
He started for England. His first ever game was winger, I think.
Didn't he get run over by Jonah Lomu in one of the Lomu tries when he was wearing...
He was 15.
Was he 15 then?
Moving 12, absolute dynamite. I loved him.
Yeah. He was a hell of a player.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Other games? Because the Ireland team, you don't really... It's just whether Keegan's fit or not.
Yeah, they've got different selection problems, haven't they? So
very much so.
In some cases, you're thinking, who on earth carries the ball for England? Who on earth plays 12? The Ireland selection problems are like, which of our world-class locks do we select?
Which one is going to be on the bench?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which of our world-class locks am I going to have to say they're not in the match day 23?
Yeah, because you've got McCarthy and Byrne.
Ryan and Hendo.
And then you've got Ryan Baird, Ryan Baird can do just... He might be the most talented of the lot.
Yeah. Do you reckon...
He's so talented. He's just
he could be an international. Talk about forwards playing in the backs. I think he could probably do a job as an international on the wing.
He could too.
He's rapid.
He could be the new Radiki Samo.
Oh yeah.
Well, McCarthy's having the bloody tournament of the decade at the moment for a ball carrying lock.
Mm. Yeah.
So not going to drop him, and then. Well, which way do you go? The potential island... Well, the guy who everyone assumed would be the island captain in Ryan or...
Byrne.
Byrne is just a world-class operator.
Byrne's basically undroppable.
He's undroppable.
Six? I don't know.
Byrne is six because the back row options are so good as well.
Omani, Baird, Conan, Doris.
Van der Fleer.
Jack Conan. I mean, just to have that guy coming off the bench.
Right, I'm going to ask a really controversial question now, right?
Yeah.
Now, you just listed those guys, and I think, they're really good. They're really good because they've had time in the Irish jersey and time in good systems. Just say if you split them up and divided them up into, say, random number, 10 teams, how many of those guys would then make it as internationals? Do you think they'd all make it, or do you think they'd all get lost in the system? Do you think you'd have a completely different set of players? Do you think they're a product of all playing together and being in the system?
Well, okay,
class.
I know Phil was just about to come in. I'll just say there's one example where they were outside to a degree of that Irish setup, and that's with the British and Irish Lions. And Jack Conan was the starting number 8 for the Lions in South Africa.
Mm.
He was awesome. So, and he's a guy that doesn't get into the starting team for Ireland.
Yeah, fair. But I just wonder.
Doris would absolutely be the best player in his team.
I don't know his answer. I mean, I just think
he is Rolls Royce of a player.
Do you know, like, the way that players who are born in September become better than players that are born in January? I'm not going to go into it, but
that effect, which was made famous by Malcolm Gladwell,
it disappears. He turns out to be a bit of a grifter, but nevertheless,
the effect disappears. Like he cherry picked data from Canadian under 20s ice hockey. Like it disappears when you get to professional level athletes.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh well, ignore me then.
It is true at age grade because they're bigger.
Yeah. Okay.
But then it disappears because
But then the theory is because they're bigger, they get better coaching because they're always selected and
more opportunities.
And I just wonder, like with the Irish guys, do they make the the Lions team, because yeah, okay, they're equally as good, say, physically, but then the fact they're in these high performance, absolute top end systems all of the time, their entire career, is that what propels them to that next 5%?
Well, I suppose that comes back to the English school system.
Well, no, I think it comes on
and the pathways,
like the professional system, doesn't it? The professional club system, because the Irish all go to private school. I mean, they're all hanging around Blackrock College or something. Yeah, so it's not at schoolboy level. I don't think it's that much different. But then that professional level, it is a bit different, because the Leinster team is effectively the Ireland team. Yeah. You're in Leinster; it's only a matter of time before you're wearing green.
I think it's Ben Darwin's point on cohesion.
I think so. Yeah,
I think there is something in that. You distribute the talent. Because of the salary cap, broadly evenly or semi-evenly across 10 teams, there will be less cohesion than if 80%... Because the IRFU, to a degree, manipulate so that they get the best players playing together.
Mm.
And then if there is surplus players, say, like Jordy Murphy would be a good example, who became, say, the sixth or seventh choice back row for a period of time, well... then they don't need him in Leinster. He can go off to Ulster and play there.
So, how do you account for Bundiaki?
Well, because he was brought in by Pat Lamb, wasn't he?
He was, but then they lost Robbie Henshaw, didn't they?
They did, to Leinster.
I don't know enough about Irish rugby, so someone would have to tell me this.
Because it will take us off down a tangent, maybe I'll just little plant a seed and we could cover this off in the Patreon podcast, but you mentioned Bundiaki. That seems to have sparked lots of conversations and accusations this week. Well, and actually Duane van der Merwe as well. There was a Telegraph article, I think it was Telegraph, anyway, it was an article on Monday this week saying, decrying the qualification process of rugby, and that actually the guys that aren't of that nationality playing rugby for their adopted country is
I'm pretty sure I've heard this before.
I know, but that's what I mean. Yeah. Doing this, there's a time to have that conversation, and I think it's a totally legitimate conversation to have, whatever opinion you have on it. Doing it on a Monday morning after Duane van der Merwe scores a hat trick against England,
yeah,
probably not the best time to do it.
The old school right is congratulations to Duane, you absolute animal, and then have the conversation when they're, I agree with that actually.
But the conversation about Duane that I think's more interesting in the wake of that is, if he were, if he hadn't played for Scotland and were eligible for the Springboks, would he make their match day team? Because there's a lot of South African fans that would just say, no, not a chance, because he's too slow. We look at what happened when he played for the Lions. Okay, we worked
he's
him
not
out,
too slow.
Kicked over okay. him.
He might not think quick enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't see any evidence of that. But maybe in the early years, he might not be thinking quick enough. And that's a real thing. Can you think fast enough for international rugby? Can you make that snap decision in order to apply your talents to the best of your ability? That's a real thing. Joe Cocker-Nasinga, I speak about this at length. I see no evidence that Duane van der Merwe is too slow for South Africa. Where I do think he wouldn't fit in South Africa is, he's not one of these lads that gets in the air, gets airborne and chases kicks.
Yeah.
And that is more valuable to South Africa than someone who scores three tries, ironically, because they're not going to score three tries because they don't play like that.
They did work him out a little bit in that Lions series. They kicked over him and he was all at sea.
Well, that's kind of my point, isn't it? What do they value? Kick chasers. You know, they've got the world's best kick chasers, and they're awesome at it. They are absolutely awesome.
So in the same way, when you look back at those the old footage, like Jonah Lomu had some unbelievable...
I was about to mention this.
He was incredible. Like, the guy was a freak, a physical freak, incredible athlete. Very few of his highlight moments that you see were against South Africa.
Well, the one I was going to mention
Did he never score again? There's something about him...
Is that really?
I think he might never have scored against South Africa.
Wow. Well,
what I was going to mention is that the Australians kicked to him. So the Australians kicked to him and had Joe Roth and Ben Tune, I think it was, or Paul Burke, jumping all over him, and Chris Latham, because I'm sure it is Joe Roth, actually. Just put the ball high and we'll just jump up wherever he is. And it was really, really difficult day in the office.
Here we go. Jonah Lomu's... Play international performances and international tries. So he played 63, scored 37 tries. He played against Australia 13 times and scored 6 tries. England played 7, scored 8. France played 8, scored 4. Ireland played 4, scored 3. Scotland played 6, scored 7. South Africa played 12, scored
1-0.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Imagine they did target him. They are
massively.
They are a prideful bunch.
And quite physical as well. Oh, this is the most physical winger in the world. Okay.
Oh really? Let's see.
Just on the point around eligibility, and I'm very, I don't really care about the eligibility. 3 years felt fine. 5 years felt fine. I think the move to allow people to represent countries of their birth,
that's not played for
years, really is generally a good move. One thing I will say about Scotland is, so they are phenomenal at identifying and bringing in players from elsewhere who have either got Scottish ancestry or kind of project players. Their foundations are not stable. And by that I mean they are consistently getting hammered, including by Italy, in the under-26 nations. And they've been relegated. 2 years ago, they got relegated from the under-20s World Cup. So they are no longer in the top 12 teams. So when you see the sheer number of South African or Australia, New Zealand, or indeed English born and raised players in the Scotland team, that is fine for the Scotland team, but it's not long-term
on
great foundations.
Right. I'm not entirely sure that a good under-20s team means anything anymore. You always hear about these devastating under-20s teams. Italy have had one for a long time. And they just don't... I'm starting to think they might be a waste of money. They're just a vanity project for various unions. Because there's a lot of evidence that backs this up, even if most of it is circumstantial and hearsay, nevertheless. So like Ed Slater was talking about the interview given by Conor O'Shea, which effectively says, oh yeah, okay, we've got the under-20s and they're going to feed through and there's going to be continuity into the A's and then into the full England team. You've got Wales who are often really good at under-20s, but that doesn't necessarily come through all the time. Scotland, who are rubbish, and they're doing pretty well. I just think it's probably not a great way to spend your money.
I think there is. And so, as a great example, in the last 16 years, or 15 years that it's run, 16th will be this year, South Africa have only once not made the semi-finals.
Is that right?
Yeah. Whereas Wales, for example, they've only made the semis three times, and that was 10 years ago. New Zealand, this is an interesting one. New Zealand have comfortably won the most. They have, until 2 years ago, they had only, again, once not made the semi-finals. The last 2 years, they've been seventh twice.
Crikey.
So quarterfinals. Oh. That is not good. Similarly, England, historically very good, last couple of years have been poor. France have won the last three.
And Ireland have suddenly got a good team in the last few
years. I think I'd need to spend a little bit more time thinking about this because I wonder if it just depends on your geography. So England under-20s, for instance, you are rife for poaching from the other home nations. Yep. In fact, all the home nations are rife for poaching off each other. If you're in South Africa, you're fairly well isolated. There's no Zimbabwe I'm going to come calling.
Scotland.
Scotland might.
Or England.
New Zealand, you're so isolated down there. It's very...
I bet there's lots of players who have played under-20s for New Zealand who have subsequently gone on to play for Tonga, Fiji or Samoa. Or indeed Australia. Like Taniela Tupu, he was New Zealand. I'm sure he grew up in New Zealand, but went across.
Well, they do say, don't they, that there's more New Zealanders playing for the
islands
and vice versa, despite what all the criticism is.
Well, that's what New Zealand say. I'm sure.
The stats do back it up, as in there's more New Zealand-born players play for, maybe less so Fiji, but certainly Tonga and Samoa.
Yeah, but the really good Islander guys.
The ones that matter.
Get pinched.
Play Bill Matter.
Quite. And bringing this back down to grassroots rugby, I think you could make the argument that maybe under-20s isn't as big an indicator of the success or otherwise of how a national team's going to be. I think you can make that point. And one thing I think I might have said this before, I would love it if there was a mindset shift in rugby union where Colts teams became almost the biggest team at a club.
Absolutely not. Rugby club. Not interested.
First team and Colts should be.
First team, yeah. First team, 100%.
First team, Colts. I would love crowds of... And this is what, and the reason I mention this is because this is what it's like at rugby league clubs.
I, I wonder if
all of the old boys, all of the Alakadoos at the club, all the old fellas will take a massive interest in how the under 16s getting on, and then
hang on a minute,
which one, and the under 18s is a massive deal.
Is it under 18s or is it older than that?
No, I think it's under 18s.
Oh, is it? Because I can see an argument for under 21s being a huge deal.
But then it's like under 21s, kind of these. Or
under 20s, maybe.
With strength and conditioning.
Yeah. Like, you should be a first team player.
Yeah. If you're good enough at age 19, you should be a first teamer.
So what Colts is in the 19s?
Under 18s.
Yeah, it's like it's A levels, isn't it?
Yeah. Once you finish your A levels. You can either do junior Colts and senior Colts, under 17s, under 18s, or you can just play them as a 2-year.
Yeah, it is under 19s.
I'm sure we used to do under 19s.
Because I remember going back from uni a couple of times.
Well,
because my birthday's late in the year.
I think it is, though. I don't think
it might have changed.
I think it's changed. I think Colts was under 18 Colts.
So 20 years ago.
So when you leave sick form, when you would, traditionally, if you follow the natural pathway, when you leave school after A levels or whatever it is you do, GMVQs or whatever they do now, and you may go off to university or go and get a job, that's the point of where Colts ends.
I think it was different, though.
I think it might have been under 19. I think it might be right.
Yeah, because I certainly played. I remember coming back from uni a couple of times in my first year and playing Colts for big games.
Maybe it changes a different count, but that's certainly how the setup is in Lancashire now, I think. Because we've just had to enter the team for next year, and the question was, do we want to join with the age group above?
Senior Colts or junior Colts?
Do we want to play Colts or play junior Colts?
Yeah. So what have the boys decided?
Junior Colts. And we also had to say, they said, what tier of competition? Because suddenly Lancashire joins with Cheshire at that point. So it's a proper league structure.
There'll be a national cup at that level as well.
Yeah, I know. And so it's like, right, what tier do you think you should be in? And
Top tier.
We said top tier.
We always back ourselves at home.
So we'll go with Macclesfield and Wilmslow and all the big guns.
Macclesfield King's School today?
King's Mac.
Bloody hell! It's an incredible facility.
Oh really?
It's like nothing I've seen for a long time. I mean, it's very very modern. It is massive. My daughters were playing hockey there, and it's right opposite the rugby club.
Oh, okay,
literally right next to it.
Yeah,
incredible
school. It's awesome. Heavy pitches. Oh, I guess it'd be AstroTurf, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Did you see what match it was yesterday in the Regional 2 Thames League?
Regional 2... It was Marlow against Aylesbury.
It was Marlow against Aylesbury.
It wasn't a good day for all people that love rugby. There's like a small enclave of England that enjoyed this, but outside of that, it was a sad day. It was a sad day for all involved.
Well, it's just kind of down. Well, I think Falerians are going to get relegated, but it's down there towards the bottom of the table, and the mighty Marlow managed to pull themselves ahead of Aylesbury on points difference.
It's first time in history that's happened
in the table down there. In 9th and 10th.
Yeah. And it's like the last battle, isn't it, of Lord of the Rings, like good versus evil. apparently Aylesbury was struggling for players this weekend, which is a shame. I've had a few selection headaches, and I'm not saying Marlow have some guys in the army playing. I'm not saying that, but maybe they have some guys from the army playing. Maybe they've got a few Fijians or something. It doesn't matter. Congratulations, Marlow.
I'm going to mention one local match, there's a really interesting story bubbling away, and I'm just going to make sure I know what league is. It is the Regional 1 Northwest.
Northwest. Okay.
Is that level 6 or level 5?
I
think it's level 5. So at the bottom of the table, it's looking like a very interesting finish to the season. At this point, there's quite often one team is away and they're gone. This one, there is 1 point separating the bottom 3 teams. With 3 games to go, it's Leek bottom on 24 points, Sandbach 11th on 25, and Northwich 10th on 25.
Wow.
And Sandbach play Leek in the final game of the season.
Okay.
Right, but yesterday what happened was Sandbach played Northwich. So the two of them are right down there in the relegation.
Yeah, and they're right next to each other. Well, not quite, but close.
Yeah, they're not far away.
Very, very close.
Yeah.
And the tight head prop for Sandbach is a mate of mine. And he was playing against his brother, who was the loose head prop for Northwich.
Oh. Who's your mate?
Theo.
Do I know him? Well, how do you know? I don't know.
Manchester Metropolitan University is one of the other coaches there.
It's like the Marafu boys.
Yeah.
When they played for. One played for Australia and one played for
Fiji.
Yeah, I want to say Fiji, but I might be wrong. Yeah. They certainly one of them made their debut against the other one in international rugby.
Yeah. So two brothers, one a tight head, one a loose head. Clubs which are very close to each other, big rivals, in a relegation dogfight match yesterday. It's pretty cool.
I've played a whole game against Northwich. I don't think I got on the field against Sandbach, or if I did, it was very, very, very quickly. Sandbach have always been very, very good. Like, they've always been one of those teams that kind of hovers between level 6 and level 5. Mm. Yeah, they're pretty good. I never understand Northwich, though. For the life of me, I do not understand. So do you know the setup of Northwich?
No,
not at all.
Do you not? Okay, no. So Northwich, from what I remember, I'm sure there'll be someone in Northwich will correct me. Northwich and Winningham Park are two of the closest teams you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. Like, literally next to each other. Winningham Park have a clubhouse, but when I've played Winningham Park, I've always been down the leagues. Either Broughton Park got relegated or been with Top 8 trying to climb the leagues. So they've always been down there. Northwich play next door on what looks like a school pitch. It's either a school pitch or it is a leisure centre pitch, right? You change in a leisure centre or a school. There's no clubhouse, and yet they're always level 5 or level 6. Always. Mm. So they're always like the senior club in the area for reasons I just don't understand. Like, why would you go to that club rather than Winnington Park? I'm sure there's good reasons for the lads to play there, but I don't know what they are.
So I've got a little local story from this week where Edinburgh Northern travelled to one of the final games of the season. They travelled down to Earlston in the Borders. And there was a 5-minute piece on this on Borders TV, which was it was very good because they showed like 2 minutes of the game and then a couple of minutes chatting to the captains afterwards. Edinburgh Northern, so both teams needed to win to go to a cup final next week. And Edinburgh handily beat them 40 points to 10, scoring some nice tries in bad conditions. But the last 3 minutes of the video, which was talking to the two captains, was really good because they were talking about what it means to them, like how their seasons are going, how they're getting the boys down. One captain looking forward to final next week and the other like reflecting on his season. And the Earlstown captain was just, he basically had 2 minutes on the social side of the rugby club, saying we had a big social back end of last year where all the boys bought in. And this year it's been every away game, too many buses, everyone kind of having a good time, getting together as a club. And it was just, I just really enjoyed listening to it.
I enjoyed listening to it. Everyone with half mind would enjoy listening to it. A lot of people would point to that being the problem with rugby.
It was brilliant. So, well done, Edinburgh Northern, and good luck for cup final next weekend.
But it did strike me, with games like that coming up, that this is the point of the season where there is some really interesting matchups going on. So let us know, please. Contact headchasers@gmail.com. I've already pointed out, in a few weeks' time, it's going to be an absolutely monumental match. Probably the loser will get relegated between Sandbach and Leek. Mm. And I want to keep an eye on games like that. Yeah, we've already had the Mighty Marlow beating Aylesbury. These are the big games we need to keep an eye on. I completely forgot to mention, so it'd be remiss of me not to just circle back to England Ireland for a second, because we've got a really interesting stat from Rory. And he's done that. He's written this out by hand and sent us a picture of this. Since 1997, so we're talking, I think, 26 matches in the Six Nations or Five Nations in that time between England and Ireland. In every single one of those 26 games, have I got that right? 26? Anyway, however
from what,
many years,
from what year? From
2000, and including back to and including 97. So,
okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah, 26.
26,
games.
Yeah, yeah.
In every single one of those 26 games, the team in front at halftime has won.
Mm.
There has not been a single occasion where a team has come back
from a deficit.
From a deficit, whether 1 point or whatever, and won it. So,
you're saying that Ireland are going to be up at half time then?
I think I probably am. Thank you, Rory, for that. Contact headchasers@gmail.com.
Speaking of half time, full time results, did you see my beloved Hurricanes against the Reds this weekend.
I didn't see that one. I did notice the Crusaders, now Scott Robertson has left, have started losing.
They're back in the Todd Blackadder era, or equivalent to Todd Blackadder era. Losing your fly half as well.
I'm just looking.
Does harm them.
38-33.
Which was...
Is he losing your fly half? What?
Mwinga.
Where is he?
He's gone to Japan, hasn't he?
That'll do it for you.
So it was a draw at halftime. It was a draw at full time.
Oh, they had extra time, did they? Did they do that in Super Rugby now?
They now do the golden point. So it was a try 7 minutes into the 10-minute golden point.
Yeah, Cam Røygaard scoring a try in 60s. So it was 33 all at full time.
Yes. And wow. Jordy Barrett got red carded with about 25 minutes to go as well.
Ooh.
Jordy B. Oh, yeah. Good win for my beloved boys.
Yeah, interesting.
Hmm.
And the one of the games of the weekend as well, there was a couple, Moana Pacifica against Fijian Drua, which is a pretty cool fixture.
Yeah, it is a cool fixture.
39. Especially with
Mark Evans will be devastated.
Yeah, 39-36.
Talking of Mark Evans, we'll be podcasting again this Tuesday.
Eggonomics.
Fantastic. Eggonomics.
You're leaning into that? Yeah, liked the name. I love the name, mate.
It sounds like I've got no choice.
I think it's a great name.
Eggonomics.
I was down in London.
Eggonomics hyphen... The business of rugby.
Yes, exactly. Well, I was down in London this Tuesday, meeting all sorts of interesting people. And the consensus from people at this meeting is like, they like the name. It's like, but it's just, okay, fine. I'm losing this argument.
My favourite name for a podcast is Egg Chasers, but for pigeon racing.
Yeah, the real Egg Chasers.
Yeah. Egg Chasers was a great bloody name, wasn't it?
It is a great name.
Yeah,
it is a great name.
It's lasted the test of time.
Yeah.
Anyway, more blowing smoke up our own arse. Other Six Nations games. What is it this weekend? It's
good question.
France Wales.
It is
Wales France.
So there's no Friday night game.
Scotland Italy.
It is Italy hosting Scotland, yeah. England Ireland, and then in the Principality Stadium, Wales France
on Sunday,
3 o'clock on Sunday.
I have no interest in Sunday games in Cardiff.
Yeah, you don't want to be in Cardiff.
I just can't think of anything worse. Being like half cut on
Friday
a Sunday
night, yes.
Yeah.
Saturday evening, yes.
Absolutely. I smashed in Cardiff on a Sunday. Ugh, no.
The best game to go to would be Italy-Scotland in Rome. 2 o'clock kickoff in Rome.
That's pretty
finished
cool.
By half four.
Yeah.
And then you're out in Rome for the night. That'd be
Cardiff
fantastic.
Just hasn't got the culture to pull off a Sunday. I don't mean to be cruel, it just hasn't.
Unless there's a bank holiday.
That'd be a completely different...
That's different.
Yeah.
It can't be... On a school night. Cardiff International Rugby on a school night, no. Just no.
Yeah, it's just not that city. It knows what it is, and it's not that.
Yeah. So, predictions then. Italy hosting Scotland.
Scotland.
Relatively comfortable in the end, away win, I think.
I think probably in the end, yeah.
England hosting Ireland. Very comfortable away win.
Unfortunately, I don't think very comfortable. I wouldn't go as far as saying very comfortable. I will come back from that and say comfortable away win.
I think
so maybe by 12.
Yeah, I think between 2 and 3 scores it will be in the end. Fortunately.
Yeah, maybe.
And then Wales hosting France.
France batter them.
France have been bad.
They have
this
been
Six
bad.
Nations.
They have, but I've got a feeling they're going to show up for this one.
I also have a feeling they're going to. I think this is the one where they.
Wales have really
house in order.
For Wales to get a close loss, they have to play at 100% capacity. Everything has to go right for them. I really admire them. I do admire them, but they're not good.
What I will say is Wales's defence has been very well organised and worked incredibly hard. And France have stuttered a bit in attack. Not in any of their games, they've not scored many points. So it might be a game that Wales will suit. Or will suit Wales. The problem with that is if France actually get their house in order, they could absolutely tear them apart, completely destroy a very young Wales team.
Agreed.
Which I think is probably the most likely scenario. So there you go.
I think we're all done here. Oh, do you want to talk about Stuart Hogg quickly?
Or are we going to save that for the Patreon pod?
Well, hang on, I'm not going to say anything that controversial.
All right, I'll tell you what. Say what you want to say about Stuart Hogg, and then if there's anything else we want to pick up on the Patreon podcast, we can.
Yeah, so Stuart Hogg's got arrested this week. And, well, first and foremost, we don't know anything about it. That's the most important thing. Isn't it? We literally don't know anything other than a disturbance outside the marital home, if that's the correct word for, you know, how he's behaved in the past.
Yeah, but, it's former
marital home. Right?
Yeah, former family home.
Now, it's not good. That's the first thing I want to point out. This is not a good scenario. And Stuart Hogg, it is fair to say, with the recent press coverage he has had, has shown himself not exactly to be a family man. Would you agree with that? Like, he has got some weaknesses, and they mostly evolve around women.
Well, he hasn't come out and talked about any of it. None of the people involved have come out and talked about any of it.
Well, particularly this actual case.
All that the internet... No, I'd say in all of it, there is no one directly involved who has come out and said anything about it.
About this case?
No, about any of it.
What do you mean, any of it?
Any of the things which you're referring to?
Oh, I think there's been many quotes about Stuart Hogg's behaviour. Yeah, no, there has.
There's been many quotes. Not from individuals involved.
Yes, there has. There's been many pictures, many quotes, many stories, many things confirmed.
From individuals involved?
From individuals involved, yes. You wouldn't need to look hard. I'm not going to look hard now, but let's just go with that just being a small side issue. We don't know anything about this latest arrest. We just don't, okay? Now, because we don't know anything about it, I don't really want to speculate about, you know, what the right course of action is for Stuart Hogg. But the reason I bring this up is because I just find this such a problem with rugby. I logged onto Twitter to find out what he had done. Because, you know, when you see, like, arrest, you think, okay, mm-hmm. Well, in that case, they're not going to say it on the BBC, but someone might say it on Twitter. And what depressed me so much about this was just the attitude of, he is an absolute scumbag. He's no longer, you know, can we all now agree that he's never a Scotland great? questioning of the rugby ability. Almost like the joy on the online community. And these aren't like just like trolls. I mean, they are trolls as in like they are, but they are without doubt rugby accounts. They are people who participate in the rugby ecosystem in Twitter, which is why I'm so glad that I'm off it. But just almost like the joy and the want to bring down a very successful rugby player. And I think when you're looking at sport, you have to partition the sportsman from his individual behaviour.
Unless that individual portrayed a particular impression and used that as a, for like commercial leverage. David Beckham would have to be very, very careful about his behaviour because he is leveraged being a great dad and family.
Exactly.
Man.
But that's like his brand, okay?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I'm happy to say, oh my word, what an arsehole. Brand is a complete sham. Great at corners.
Yeah.
Like
outstanding.
I would never, ever question his footballing ability or his dedication to the sport or anything else, actually. And I also don't want to see him... This is David Beckham. I also wouldn't want to see any man really be just crushed. And I think that's the thing which I found so upsetting about the Stuart Hogg thing.
What I would say about the Stuart Hogg thing, you've already touched on it, is we don't know. And I don't know how many more examples
of we don't
there need to be of situations where you don't know, where the best course of action would be to
shut up,
don't say anything, and wait and find out what the facts are. Juicy Smollier would be one prime example. Well, the Covington kids. I don't know how
Ugo Monya. Ugo Monya. I mean, look, in this case, the police have arrested and charged someone because the police tend to arrest and charge people who have done something wrong. I don't remember Ugo Monya or anyone else involved in that rowing it back because the police didn't charge anyone and they are no longer involved. You're right, Tim. People jump on bandwagons all the time before knowing what exactly has happened. Now,
so I'm going to keep my counsel and say nothing because I'd rather wait. I'll give a comment and opinion if I feel one is called on when there are facts.
Yeah, I have nothing to say about Stuart Hogg stuff other than the glee and the want to destroy a man before the facts are known. I'm not sure if it disgusts me or just irritates me.
Well, one of the issues I have with it is those people you reference who have gone in, and
they're all for mental health, by the way. Don't forget that they always double for mental health.
Maybe it's, who knows? We don't know the facts. Maybe in the fullness of time, those comments may be justified. But what one thing that frustrates me is what tends to happen on the occasions where those comments are contradicted by the facts. They never go back and go,
I was wrong.
Do you know what? I got that wrong. If anything, they look for ways to try and actually demonstrate, but I was right still.
Oh, he wasn't a good bloke anyway.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe I'm just projecting here because from what I understand, Stuart Hogg likes the ladies. And I'm sure that
he likes a drink as well.
He likes a drink and he likes the ladies.
He loves his rugby too.
And I'm just not sure if I love my rugby and I love my drink that much and as successful as Stuart Hogg, that I wouldn't be any better than Stuart Hogg, quite frankly. But as I don't have ladies throwing themselves at me, I I've never been in that situation. I wouldn't know.
If you had that hair and those teeth,
yeah. Anyway. It's happened so many times, so many players, and I just wait and see what happens.
Yes, absolutely.
Well said.
Shall we do a Patreon then?
Let's do a Patreon pod. Right, so yeah, for more content, and some of it may be spicy, patreon.com/eggchasers is where you can find us. That helps keeps the lights on. If you appreciate the fact that we've been here every single weekend, and let me just remind you, we make sure there's a podcast every Monday, 52 weeks of the year. And sometimes that's while JB is in a hospital bed, while Phil's indeed in a desert on holiday, while I'm in a camper van travelling around France.
All right, humble brag.
You're the only one who's not done it from a hospital bed, because I have done it from a hospital bed as well.
You've done it from a hospital bed as well. Yeah. Touch wood, I've not needed to do one from a hospital bed.
But time to settle those scores.
Yeah, if I were in a hospital bed, rest assured I would do one. I hope I don't have to, but yes, we'll see. But I will, and if you appreciate that fact, you can help keep the lights on and show your appreciation and get more content. patreon.com/eggchasers. Let the boys end.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.